You're listening to a proud member of the Dice Tower Network, dedicated to bringing podcasters together for the greater good of gaming. It's sort of like Voltron, but with better lip syncing. Find out more at dicetowernetwork.com.
This episode of The Family Gamers is sponsored by the Wild East Game Company. You can go to wildeastgames.com/order to find all of the games that the Wild East Game Company has created. Whether you're looking for privateering rodents, some upset totems, or some electrified dice, the Wild East Game Company has the game for you. Check them out online at wildeastgames.com.
Welcome to another episode of the Family Gamers Podcast. This is episode 120.
120 is a wonderful number. Did you know that 120 is the height in inches of a regulation basketball hoop in the NBA? That's 10 feet. I mean,
yeah, sure, because it's 10 feet.
Yeah,
yep.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yep. So, that's 120.
Yeah, we were looking for some way to tie in 120 to the news that the basis for the kilogram has changed, but I couldn't find any good way to do it.
Well, I mean, we could just talk about that.
I think it's really cool.
Yeah, we're a bunch of nerds, which is why we think it's really cool.
Well, so the whole idea here is that, you know, instead of taking this cylinder of metal that has been the basis of the kilogram for, I don't know, 200 years?
Yeah, some long amount of time.
More than a century. The more science advances, the more they have realized that even this non-reactive metal is slowly sloughing off atoms and losing mass.
That's a fun word.
It is. And so maybe using something that is in fact slowly changing over time as the basis for something that's supposed to be a true constant, not the best idea in the world. What do you think?
I mean, I agree with that idea. Plus the new system that they're using is this like crazy thing with lots of lasers and all sorts of neat stuff. And I think that's cool. There's something
it's
about
officially defined based on Planck's constant now or something like that.
Yeah. But the machine that they use to measure the weight that represents the constant is so precise that it takes like 4 days just to reset it up.
Oh, just to like calibrate it.
Yeah. It's crazy. It's bananas stuff. But if you just Google like the new kilogram, you'll find some information about that. Unfortunately, you know, Gloomhaven was actually too heavy, so they couldn't use it as reference. But yeah, so I guess we're going to have to go without the board game reference, even though we know that those are the only true measurements.
How many board games tall are your children?
You know, I think we should take that picture. We should figure it out.
All right. We'll do it.
Awesome. I like that.
Anyway.
Welcome to the show, everybody. I am your host, Andrew. And as always, I am joined by my lovely, wonderful, and equally nerdy wife, Anitra.
That's me.
We've got a good show for you this week. It is Thanksgiving week.
It is, well, in the United States, anyway.
Okay. Oh, sorry. In my myopic nationalist view, it's Thanksgiving week.
Well, it's Thanksgiving here. Canada had it back at the beginning of October. Mm-hmm. All the other countries, sorry, stinks to be you. You have to wait till Christmas.
Yeah. So it's Thanksgiving week. So a couple cool things. So last week, we released our holiday gift guide for 2018.
We did. You should check it out.
Yep, you should. We also got a very nice email from a listener and newsletter reader, which was wonderful. And we'll share that in our Back Talk segment coming up. And this week, we're going to talk about games that it's a top five show. So my top five, your top five.
It's actually going to be a top five.
Right, like ranked and everything. Yep.
This is like making Family Gamers history that we're actually going to limit ourselves to five.
Oh, I see. I see how it is. Although, I bet you some of the ones in your top five are some of the same as in my top five.
Probably, but that's okay.
And so it'll actually be top like eight-ish.
because we can't do
this is how we roll. But top five each of games that support, you know, more than four players.
Games that support five players well.
Right. Right. And you know, there's the urban myth that the average American family has 2.4 kids. That actually hasn't been true for 40 years.
Yeah, it's crazy. The average is now down to like 1.8 or 1.7 kids per family.
So even though that number is dropping, you know, of course, we always wonder, what do you do with 4/10 of a child anyway?
Or even 7/10 of a child, you know.
Yeah, either way is kind of awkward. But if the average family has 2.4 kids, that's 4.4 people. And, you know, how do you support a board game that you need more than four people to play? And yeah, so that's why we're going to talk about games that support five players well.
Even if you only normally play with one kid or two kids, if you have family coming over for the holidays, maybe you want to play with more than two or three players.
Or heaven forbid your children have the audacity to bring friends over.
And want to play board games?
What? Can't even. It's crazy. But anyway, so that's what we're going to talk about today. So as always, we're going to open up the show with what we have been playing.
Yeah, we got to try our copy of Fidelitas for the first time.
Yeah, we got this game a while ago when we had Jason Katarski from Green Couch Games on the show. We talked about this game.
Yeah, it was about a year ago.
So Fidelitas is a game that he co-designed with Philip DeBarry.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, at this point, I think it's probably well known that I'm just like a sucker for good art.
Yeah.
That's a thing for me.
Yeah.
Like, it's just
the art in Fidelitas was pretty cool.
I loved it. It's this kind of old school medieval artwork kind of thing. Like, you can tell it's not genuinely from like the 1600s or whatever, but it's got that kind of medieval style.
Almost like illuminated manuscript style.
Kind of, yeah.
Sort of mixed with portraiture. Mm-hmm. It's an odd mix, but it works really well.
And so in Fidelitas, you are moving characters around in the different places in the city to accomplish hidden goal cards that you have.
Mm-hmm.
And you're basically trying to pick up more goals and cycle through them to complete them and get victory points. I mean, I didn't really know anything about the game other than the fact that I thought it looked cool. And I knew it was a filler game, so it wasn't going to be too costly to pick up. And I just had the opportunity to get it basically thrown in on a trade.
Yeah.
And so I did. I like that game. It's really fun. It reminds me a lot of the way in which I enjoy playing role player, where there's a lot of different.
It makes your brain work hard.
Yeah, it's about puzzle pieces that you have to link together and try to accomplish goals without other people knowing what those goals are.
I like that.
I guess there's some of that same thing in Illuminati, which is a game that we've been talking about, and we're really really excited about getting the 30th anniversary.
Yes.
But I'm going to stop talking.
Well, actually, much like Illuminati, something you didn't mention about Fidelitas is that each of the people that you're moving around the city has their own special power or special restrictions of how they can play or what happens when you play them or what happens when you move them. Mm-hmm. And so working on your goal is not as simple as, oh, I need to put this guy here and this guy here and then I'll be done. It's, I need to move this guy here. And that's going to move this guy over there. And then I need to move this third guy and not actually move them at all, but use their special power to do this other thing.
Yeah, and I like that.
And hope that nobody gets in my way while I'm trying to do all these different actions.
It's the Rube Goldberg machine of mechanics. And I don't know. That's fun to me. So
I enjoyed it, but it made my brain hurt a little bit.
That usually means I'm going to like it.
Yeah.
So so it was Fidelitas. We had a lot of fun with that.
I sat down with our son Asher and played a little Untold. We had a lot of fun. Anybody who knows us will know that Asher and I are both not terribly good at weaving a story. Even when it comes to factual accounts, it's, I'm going to add in all these details that don't really matter and maybe skip over some of the ones that do.
I feel like that actually would make for good storytelling with a game like Untold, where there really isn't much in the way of scaffolding around it.
Yeah.
Other than the mechanics piece, I feel like that would help with the tendency to add extraneous details would actually be helpful in a game like that.
But it's a little different when you're trying to make them up out of thin air rather than when you're recounting a historical narrative.
Yeah, but I think that's why Untold does so well with more players.
Because you'll get more details and more info.
I mean, it's hard to start, but once you kind of get going, it all builds on itself.
Yeah, but although it was a little bit of a struggle for us to get going, and a couple of times I felt like I was pulling teeth to say, like, okay, well, you figured out this information, let's use an action cube, let's use an action token. What are you going to do? Or what are you going to attempt to do?
Right.
Okay, and then we draw a card, you know, we find out if what you attempted failed, succeeded, you know, failed spectacularly, you know, and then what possible reaction there was. I'm like, okay, so how can we fit those together? What happens?
Yeah, I don't remember. I think I might have been studying when you guys were playing this, but...
maybe.
But I remember thinking a number of times, those things, as those words would come up and I would hear, like, okay, well, let's roll a cube, or let's... And I remember thinking, that is exactly why Untold exists.
Yeah, it really provides just enough more framework around the mechanic of story cubes to really assist people like Asher and I who have trouble just looking at a symbol or a series of symbols and making a story out of them.
Right. I just sat there and thought, you know, this is perfect. It's doing exactly its job. It's not being overbearing. It's the right amount of mechanics to add to 9 cubes in a box.
Yeah. I mean, it was a lame story, but it was the kind of lame story that you get from a 7-year-old obsessed with inventors and robots. So,
well, first of all, inventors and robots make awesome stories, number one. Number two, it reminds me of that, like, Chase Bank commercial where the kid recounts to his dad this awesome day they had, and the dad was like, it was just a day at the ballpark.
Yeah.
And, you know, even though you say it was lame, like, this could be an experience that he remembers from, like, remember, yeah, when we made this story together.
We had a fun time. There's a good chance we will come back and revisit the world we've created again and create more episodes in Inventor City.
You can have a guest appearance from some other child who wants to play.
But that's exactly the way it's set up.
Yep.
You can add, subtract, change your players, your cast, as needed from episode to episode.
Right.
So I'm really looking forward to playing more of it. And I'm also really looking forward to your review.
Well, you're going to help me with that review, so.
Yeah.
All right, what's next on our list?
We mentioned last week with Jen that we've really been enjoying Catch and Gnomes at Night. We played Catch a few more times this week.
Mm-hmm. It's just so simple.
It's a simple, solid game. Like, it doesn't pretend to be more than it is. And we'll have a Snap review coming out for that this coming week, I think.
Yeah, it should be out on Friday. We also had an oldie but a goodie come out. It was actually requested by the kids. You guys played some Not Dice.
We did. If you follow us on Twitter, True Confessions, I got halfway through our second game of Not Dice and was called away to deal with a minor emergency in the bathroom. A child who decided to plug up the sink and pour water all over the floor. I was very angry. So, true confession time. Games are not always all fun and games.
We put the family in the family gamers.
Yeah. That's all right, though. I mean, the kids still enjoyed playing it. We were able to figure out how to let me duck out and the two of them keep playing.
Speaking of stress in games, next game on our list is Mice and Mystics. This is a game. How do I feel about Mice and Mystics? I like Mice and Mystics a lot. It is a fantastic game in a fantastic world and all of these things. The story has been optioned. We talked about that a little bit ago. It would really make a cool movie. For some reason, and I truly think it is because we seem to revisit Mice and Mystics like once every 8 months. The mechanics feel a little bit heavy for a game that we're trying to play with a 10-year-old and a 7-year-old. And the first time we tried to play this game, our kids were
ridiculous.
Just not old enough. Our daughter was, I think she was 8 at the time, or she was 7, and he was like 4 or 5. And
yeah.
It was good.
Crazy.
Everybody needs to be able to read in order for this game to work.
For sure.
Well, because there's some games that require reading, but, you know, parents can fill in the gap and that kind of stuff. This is not that game. Everybody has to be able to read to play this. Once the mechanics are understood, it's pretty good. But there's so many, like, status variants, like what is stunned versus webbed and some stuff like that, that you really do need to have players that get the concept of an RPG.
Yes.
You know, in a way, more so than even a game like Hero Kids, because that is just, there's just less in the way of mechanics in that game. I think the entire rulebook for Hero Kids is like 20 pages long.
Yeah.
So we love Mice and Mystics, but you get stressed out by it.
I love the story for Mice and Mystics, and I want to like the game so much. I will happily play it, but we always end up sitting down for like an hour and a half, 2 hours. There's a lot of confusion and kind of wandering around and, oh, was I supposed to do this? Oh, was I supposed to do that? And don't forget, we still have another child in the house, that same one who plugged up the sink when I was playing a 15-minute game.
Right.
So I just don't like the way things turn out when we play it. Right. It's not really the game's fault, per se.
In some ways it is. In some ways it is. So we're going to try to play it a little bit more with more frequency so that it's not... We're not starting from scratch when we pick it up.
We're going to try anyway.
And we'll see how that goes. The next game was a game that you played with our middle child because he was totally homesick from school.
He was sick enough to stay home, but not...
Miraculously healed by like 10.
He was not sick enough to stay in bed. So as the day progressed, I was like, all right, well, I don't want you to sit in front of the TV. So sure, I will set aside some of the stuff I had planned to do today and we'll play some games.
What an awesome mom.
I try. Sometimes it's a hard try, but I like sitting down to play games. So we did. We tried Fight for Olympus, which is just the right amount of brain burny for me. See, it's a little simpler than some of the other ones we've talked about. But it's been quite a while since we've pulled it out. Fight for Olympus is a game where every card can be used in two different ways. And even if you decide to use a card to fight with on the board, where you place it on the board can have wildly different effects.
Right.
So Asher tried it. He did okay. But it was just too many moving pieces for him to to get. On the other hand, we also tried Rocky Road a la mode.
Yeah, which I'm kind of a little envious of you guys playing that one, I gotta be honest.
It's super cute.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got multifunctional cards. But it was just a little bit more straightforward to play. I really look forward to playing it again. We'll talk about it more the next time we play.
Yeah, also, that's the second Jason Kotarski game on our list of games.
Good stuff.
And we're going to have to tag him in this this episode of The Family Gamer, sponsored by... No, not really, but actually sponsored by Wildly's Games. Anyway, let's see. The next game on our list is a game that I was delighted to get off our shelf of shame.
Yeah, on our shelf of shame for a year
this
now?
Is okay.
Has been...
So this is a game that I picked up in what... It was one of those Barnes & Noble... clearance, 75% off sales. And I'm like, what's this game with a knight on the front? It is made by Habba. I will purchase it. That's how this game came into our house. So it's not like one of these, you know, Kickstarters that we were all like, you know, just up in arms about and freaking out, and then it comes in and it just gets put on the shelf and forgotten. Like, this is literally a crime of opportunity to get this game in.
It's also not the kind of game where you do a bunch of research and be like, I totally want this game, and when you see a deal on it, you snatch it up. It was just...
Right.
It's here. All
right,
cool.
Right. And so the game is Adventureland by Habba. And so one of the reasons why we're like, you know what, we need to get this thing off the shelf is because Habba's going to be at PAX Unplugged.
Super excited.
We are very much planning on going and meeting up with them and hopefully working with them in the future. So we wanted to make sure that we got the lesser known games off the shelf and played so that we could wow them with our knowledge of...
Let's hope.
The past catalog of Habba games.
Am I going to be a terrible person if I tell them that we don't particularly care for Animal Upon Animal?
I mean...
It's fine. It's just our kids don't like it.
Yeah, I mean, well, we only played it at a con.
Anyway, Adventureland. It's not your typical Habba game in the yellow box. Adventureland is a sort of fantasy, questy kind of thing where you have... either 8 or 10 little adventurer meeples that you can slowly move across this grid-like board. Mm-hmm. One of the major keys is you can only move east and south. You can never move north or west. So every turn is a series of decisions of, well, if I move here, how much stuff might I be leaving behind me that I'm never going to be able to do again? You're picking up different kinds of tokens along the board that get randomly placed out every turn. And along your way, you're accumulating points in different ways depending on the scenario and what you pick up and what you do. So you pick up swords and herbs and gold, and you fight monsters that are standing in your way. And when you run out of swords and something called companions, which are these cute little silver meeples that can run along next to your guys. Then the game is over and you finish the round that you're currently in. We really like it. We like it so much that we've played it twice in the last 3 or 4 days.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking forward to continuing to play it and solidifying strategy a little bit more. This last time that we played, our son Asher ran away with the score.
Oh, really?
Hugely. He was up in the 50s. Claire was in the 30s, and I was stuck in the 20s.
He has a pretty good strategy with the grabbing of all the companions. Yeah.
Because companions have a cumulative score. The more of them you get, the more each one is worth.
Mm-hmm.
So that worked exceedingly well for him the last time we played. But it's cool. I definitely want to play it more so we can talk about it in a more educated way. But I think it's good and people should look into it.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. It's very different from the normal Haba game in the sense that it's not really an abstract strategy game.
This is one where the theme is not just pasted on. Like, right. there's some depth to the theme. Not a ton, but right. Some.
But it's an interesting little game, although it's not that little. It's actually pretty big for a Haba game in terms of...
I mean, it's standard size of the box. Standard Euro board game size, more
which
or less.
Which is big for a Haba game.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. So that's definitely something. Adventureland, it's two words, by the way. If you look it up on BoardGameGeek, you got to put that space in there or you're not going to find it.
Speaking of Haba games... Quick shout out for Zitternix,
mm-hmm.
also known as
Keep
It Steady.
We got it back from the friend that we let borrow it, I noticed.
Yep, and it immediately came out at the end of the cutest possible play date between our 4-year-old and his best friend.
So we got to tell the Hamilton story, by the way. We have to do this. I don't even know. Okay. So there's this thing called LuckySeats.com, and my mom, I love my mom to death, but my mom, adorable Jewish mom, enters every contest on planet Earth.
If she can possibly see any possible use for the prize, she will enter the contest.
Okay. I mean, I'm sure my mom knows what Hamilton is. I mean, now she does, obviously.
Yeah, she had heard of it.
But she didn't really, like, understand what Hamilton is. So she enters this Lucky Seats contest. Apparently, every Hamilton show, there's 40 seats made available. Every show for $10 a seat, and they're raffled off on Lucky Seats. Go to hamilton.luckyseats.com. Anyway. And so my mom enters this contest, and she wins the raffle. So I get this email Thursday morning that says, "Do you think I should get these?"
Yes, Mom. Yes, we do think you should.
So the first
get
thing I did, I hadn't heard of Lucky Seats, so I looked it up, figured make sure it wasn't a scam, all that stuff. So I sent it back and I was like, "Yeah, you know, you should, da da da." And then as I'm looking through, I realize she has to go.
Yeah, they check your ID when you get to the box office.
Which makes sense. Like, I mean checking ID for a prepaid ticket at the box office is a fairly standard
will call thing.
Right. But it had to be her, because it was her name, on the winning raffle thing. And so I told her that she was actually disappointed because she wanted to do a nice thing and get them for us, which is lovely and wonderful, and would have been really, really cool. But like, just going to the theater is not my mom's kind of thing, you know?
Yeah, she mentioned she thought the last time that she had set foot in a theater was for some karate demonstration for you.
Probably.
So that's probably almost 30 years ago.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably. So anyway, you got to go to see Hamilton in Boston at the Boston Opera House. Ooh, last night. And
it was super cool.
Yeah, so I'm like, okay, I got to do this thing. It's fine. But I knew she gets to go see Hamilton for $10. And I was like, oh, I'm kind of jealous. And then I get this random text message from my mom, which is like, oh, front row. I'm like, okay, you know
apparently
what?
Our tickets were for the front row.
Okay, you know what, lady?
My knees were pushed up against the front wall that made up the wall for the pit orchestra. It was not the most comfortable seat, which may be part of why those are the ones that get raffled off. But
you know what?
But it was cool.
Oh, I'm overflowing with sympathy for your poor knees. Front row Hamilton, you know, in the throes
of the fame.
A lot of
looking up the actors' noses too, but you know.
Oh, I'm so sorry. You got a little bit of sweat on you.
Spit, actually. A lot of spitting by the singers.
Well, with that much rap, I'm, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So anyway, so the reason why I mentioned that is
but
because
it was a good time, but you played games.
Yeah, because I played some games while you were gone. We played Century Golem Edition, which we just love
still
and adore
love.
And have talked about immensely.
It's great.
Lots of times, so I won't go into that too much. But we also played Beyond Baker Street.
And I literally know nothing about this game except that it's been sitting on our shelf for a while. So
yeah,
tell
so
me.
I mean, this is the second shelf of shame game. Like yeah. off the list. That's awesome. And yeah. this is another one that we got via trade as well. Actually, third shelf of shame game. If you consider Fidelitas a shelf of shame game. So Beyond Baker Street is this really great cooperative game. It supports, I think, 2 to 5 players, where you are a group of detectives trying to solve a crime faster than Sherlock Holmes. The easiest way to explain this game is that this game is a cross between Hanabi and Spy Club.
Ooh.
Yeah. So there are 3 aspects of the crime that you're attempting to solve.
Mm-hmm.
Each one of these aspects has a number on it, and you're trying to solve that aspect by playing enough cards of the same genre, I'll say, to add up to the number on the aspect. And if you do that, then you can okay. confirm that aspect. But the way that you play these cards is Hanabi style. So you're holding your hand out
outwards,
away from you,
okay.
And there's a Sherlock Holmes track, and Sherlock Holmes moves along his track from a number down to 0 every time you give a piece of information to someone else in your group. Sort of like how in Hanabi you had those timer tokens that you had to burn off. Sherlock Holmes is getting closer to solving the crime while you're sharing information about someone's cards.
Mm-hmm.
And so as you gather information about your cards, you're able to play them on these aspects to solve those aspects. Here's where it gets really, really interesting. There is a discard pile called the impossible. Whenever you have eliminated the impossible, whatever remains, however improbable, must be the truth, right? So one of the things that you have to do as part of the game is discard cards face up to the impossible. And you have, I don't remember what the name of the tracker is, but you have a tracker that you have to get to exactly 20.
Oh, boy.
By adding those cards that you discard face up to the impossible.
Oh, boy.
So not only are you trying to get a perfect number match on the 3 different aspects of the crime, you also have to convey enough information back and forth to get a perfect number match
on the impossible.
The stuff that you've discarded to the impossible. There's ways to discard stuff face down to the impossible, whatever. On the stuff you discard there, in order to get that up to exactly 20. If it's under 20 and you solve the 3rd aspect, you lose. If it goes over 20, you lose.
Oh,
so
terrible.
It's like you have to get it. But it's... It is, we played one, like, round of the game, and at the end it was, I had 2 cards, I knew nothing about them. And I didn't even know that if I played the right one, we would win the game like that, and I did, and we won. And it was like, yeah!
Must feel
high
awesome.
Five!
Yeah.
Yes! Right, you know, all that stuff. But, yeah, I mean, it's, I don't know why I would bother to play Hanabi again after playing this game. So.
Wow, strong words.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, it does everything that Hanabi does and more. And it's not enough more that it's overbearing.
All right, that's fair.
So that's what we've been playing. Oh, and I've been playing a lot of Spider-Man from Insomniac Games.
As have I.
Yep. It's a good game.
you suck me in with it. You're like, oh, it's much easier than it looks to swing around the city. I'm like, maybe I could give it a try. I'm going to set the difficulty all the way down to friendly Spider-Man. And I've been having a lot of fun with it.
So that's what we've been playing. We're going to do a little bit of back talk before we head out to our break before coming back to talk about 5-player games.
Yeah. So as you mentioned real quick at the beginning of the show, we have an email newsletter.
Mm-hmm. Which is awesome. It's one of my favorite things that we produce as the Family Gamers.
Aww.
It really is because it reminds me of all the work that we did for the last 7
week.
Days. And it takes literally 60 seconds to read the email.
That's the goal.
Yep.
But in our newsletter, I send it as myself. I mean, I use a service, but I put my email address on it.
Mm-hmm.
And so sometimes I get responses.
Which is great.
We got a response this week from a very nice elderly gentleman. Excuse me. Senior Citizen Plus named Gordon.
Mm-hmm. Gordon's awesome, by the way. Like, I read this email and I was like, man, I want Gordon to be my grandpa.
So he didn't really have any questions. He was just saying, you know, thanks a lot for providing this. You've given me a bunch of good leads on new games I should try out. I've been playing games, you know, ever since I had four children and I raised them to play board games too.
Which is that's what you should do with your kids, is raise them to play board games.
But, you know, 50 years ago, that might have not been as much of an easy thing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I mean, sure. Of course. I agree.
So, and he talks a little bit, you know, his preferences for games, which are cool.
Mm-hmm.
So
we want to say
thanks for reaching out, Gordon.
Yeah, thanks for reaching out and sending us that email. It really does mean a lot to hear from the community. So don't be afraid to email us, Andrew@thefamilygamers.com, Anitra@thefamilygamers.com.
Or sign up for the newsletter.
You can do that too.
You'll get emails from me /newsletter.
Or just go to thefamilygamers.com and a little pop up.
Yep.
Easy as pie. I mean, it's Thanksgiving week, so, you know, pie.
Dad joke time. All right.
Sounds like it's time for a break.
I agree. This snap review is for Chupacabra Survive the Night, published by Steve Jackson Games, designed by David Blanchard, Brian Frodema, and John Jacobson. The packaging says it's for 2 to 4 players, ages 8+, and it plays in about 10 minutes. So Chupacabra Survive the Night is not like other dice games published by Steve Jackson Games. Instead, this is a game all about stealing other players' dice. There's no press your luck here or anything like that. The player who ends up with all the dice is the winner. So each player starts with 6 identical dice. The die faces are chickens, goats, cows, and scary red eyes representing the chupacabra. All players roll their dice simultaneously, and then they group them into flocks or herds based on what animals came up, placing the like animals together. So all your chickens in one flock, all your goats in a herd, whatever. Players who rolled any chupacabra get a chance to attack the other players in turn order. Chupacabra attack an entire herd or flock at once. So depending on how many chupacabra you have, depends how many dice you can take down. One chupacabra can take down 2 chickens or 1 goat. You need 2 chupacabra to take down a single cow. The dice that were attacked or taken down or killed become part of the attacker's dice pool for the next round. If your chupacabra cannot take down an entire herd, you get nothing. However, there's a balancing mechanism here that if a player rolls eyes on all their dice, they have rolled Chupacabra Loco. Their chupacabra, no matter whether it's 1 die, 2 dice, 4 dice, as long as it's all chupacabra, their chupacabra can take down any flock or herd no matter how large it is. But they only get to pick 1. So that's the gameplay. Super simple. It's not a press your luck game. It's just a fun way to roll dice, steal some. There's a little bit of strategic thinking if you're playing with more than 2 players, but not a whole lot. It's mostly just an easy way to pass 10 minutes. However, there is a cool feature. The dice glow in the dark. Both the animals, which are black on a glow-in-the-dark yellowish-green surface, and the red eyes glow. So hold it out in bright UV light for a couple minutes, and then go play in the dark, which is pretty cool. The gameplay moves fast. It's a lot of luck. That makes it easy for younger kids to play. Our 4-year-old can definitely play it, although he needs a little help counting the size of the herd that he can take down, but he certainly has fun playing. We find it to be the most fun with 4 players. All that said, it's fine. It's not a bad game, but it's not a great game either. It is one that leaves our kids getting frustrated on a pretty regular basis because there's nothing you can do to defend your herds and flocks of animals from being taken. It's all based on the luck of what you roll. So, in the end, it's kind of fun. It's great for any time you want a quick activity that fits in with a spooky theme, like at Halloween. We'd give it 2.5 stars. And that's Chupacabra, Survive the Night, in a snap.
Hey, we're back. So the way we're going to do this, we have ranks. We're going to work through the ranks. Mm-hmm. It's going to be amazing. We're going to build up, right? It's like a bad techno song with a good drop beat, right? Anyway.
So we're going to take turns and start
sure,
at number five?
Yeah, let's do that.
All right.
You want to go first?
Ladies first.
All right, fine. Well, my number five of games for five players would be Happy Little Accidents, the Bob Ross game.
Mm-hmm. This is a fun game.
Well, we've reviewed it before. It's a fun way to sit down with five or six people for 20 minutes, and you don't really need any game skill,
right?
And you don't really need any drawing skill, and everybody kind of like politely says like, "Oh, yeah, I can see that," or "Sure." I got that.
No, nobody expects Da Vinci artwork.
They better not in 60 seconds.
Plus, for us, we have the special memory of playing this game with Flip Flory.
And that was pretty fantastic.
So that was that. Happy Little Accidents, your number five. My number five is what I consider to be the classic gateway game, and that is Ticket to Ride.
That's a good choice.
Yep. There's tons of options in all the different kinds of maps with all the different levels of mechanics. You can make them more complex, less complex. You can now order lots of different geographic maps that might, be where you're from and these kinds of things. Mm-hmm. There's just tons of options there. I personally like the base game with the 1910 expansion just for a lot of extra content right there.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm not sure all of the maps support five players.
I'm sure they don't all support five players, but there's so much variety in what you can get with Ticket to Ride that I know there's some people who don't like it as a game, but
sure.
It's just the great gateway game for me. Everything is really tangible and easy to understand. It's a really fun Euro.
And the classic game with five players is really fun and really tight. Like, you're always fighting for the route that you want and mm-hmm. having to make plan B and plan C and maybe even plan D.
Yep. So that's my number five, Ticket to Ride.
All right. Number four. This is going to be a bold choice. You ready?
No.
Dinosaur Tea Party.
Okay. That's a bold choice because
I have never played it.
Right.
I am doing this on the strength of Nick's review alone,
mm-hmm.
but it looks like a fantastic game. I always really enjoyed Guess Who as a kid. And having a game that has that same sort of feel, but playable by a lot more people, you're all kind of working on the same playing field rather than, a head-to-head thing. I think it sounds fantastic, and I would love to play it. And I think probably the more players you have, the more fun it is.
Sure. All right, so my number four is a game that, unsurprisingly, we have talked about before on the show, as most of these are, and that's Space Team.
Woo, Space Team!
So Space Team is a game where everybody is sitting around the table and you are working together to fix your spaceship, which is broken. Everybody has a handful of tools and they're trying to work their way through their stack of broken parts of the spaceship, more or less.
Problems, yeah.
Yeah, problems to deal with. There's a lot of yelling back and forth. You can think of this as multiplayer cooperative pit.
There's a lot of yelling and a lot of passing and a lot of dropping the really slippery cards.
Yep, and there's a lot of really silly things like you can't talk until for the rest of the game. You can't use your thumbs anymore.
Yep.
Everybody has to say your name because you, quote, fell asleep to wake you up.
Yep.
Or everybody's got to put a finger on one card and yell 1, 2, 3, pull to, clear that issue. And then six of the cards they're kind of jumbled in with the problems, and they're the six sections of the ship that you have to fix. And so you have a 5-minute timer, and the rush is to get those six seconds.
Yeah, so you don't have to get all the way through everybody's deck. You just have to find the six sections.
Right, and sometimes, it does work out that sometimes they're closer to the top, and the game happens to be a little bit less difficult, but the game is all about...
And then you
want to
play again right
now. Yeah, the game's all about screaming and yelling at/with all of the people that you're playing with. So it's just a ton of fun. It's just crazy.
It's true.
So that's my number four.
All right. Number three. Sorry, channeling a little bit of You Don't Know Jack there. My number three would be Century. Century Spice Road or Century Golem Edition.
Mm-hmm.
We love it. We talk about it ad nauseum.
Yes, we do.
and it supports five players. So, great.
So there it is. Right. My number three is a game that that has been getting a little bit of the hate on Facebook lately, which I don't really understand, but that's fine. And that's Magic Maze.
Well, it's not for everyone.
I mean, I just really love this game a lot. I think this game, one of the reasons why I put Magic Maze on this list is because it scales incredibly well, anywhere from 1 to 8 players. And there's not a lot of games that scale and do it as well as a game like this one does.
I will say, to disagree with you slightly, I think 5 players is pretty much the most awkward player count for Magic Maze. Because you have 3 players who have their thing to do, and then 2 players who just have the same direction, I think it's north, and can't do anything else. So, you know, those 2 players, in my experience, usually end up doing a lot of trying to steal or take over from each other.
You have 2 players that whose only job is exactly the same as each other's?
That yes.
That seems curious to me.
Mm-hmm.
But, well, I'm still standing by it.
I still
think it's an excellent game for large groups. And
I really like it.
Number 3.
I just think 5 players is the weakest player count for Magic Maze.
My number 2, I'm going to skip ahead, is Century Golem Edition.
So, hey!
Or Spice Road, either way. That's my number 2.
All right. My number 2 is Takedo. So we've talked about this a little bit in the not-too-distant past.
Mm-hmm.
Very chill. Very calm.
Yes.
It's got the interesting mechanic that turns don't really go in order. Turns are always favoring whoever's last in line, which once our kids got the hang of, they actually really like the idea of that mechanic of, oh, if I'm in the back, then I get to go.
Right.
It plays just as well at 5 players as it does at 2 or 3. There's some slight adjustments in the rules that make it work that way. And I like it as a way to calm down from playing things like Magic Maze and Space Team and even Happy Little Accidents, where your adrenaline will really get pumping.
Mm.
Cool. How about you? What's your number 1?
Okay, so my number 1, my favorite game to play with 5-plus players, is Deep Sea Adventure.
Oh, that's a great game. It should have made my list.
Yeah, I just, pretty much ever since we had that chat with Ryan Gutowski about it, it's been really high on our list. It's an excellent game. It's super flexible. It's really easy to teach.
It's really compact.
Everybody dies the first time you play.
Everybody dies.
Everybody's dead, Dave. It's just a great little game.
Yeah.
And I, you know, it's top of my list.
All right. Well, my number 1 is another great little game. A little bit different, though. It's Go Nuts for Donuts. Unlike Deep Sea Adventure, our 4-year-old can play Go Nuts for Donuts. Mm-hmm. And so it regularly gets played with 4 or 5 players in our house.
Mm-hmm.
It's great. You work on pattern recognition and what it means to do secret voting, which is kind of hard for a 4-year-old to get the concept of, but we're getting there slowly but surely.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of those games where I find everybody ends up laughing at some point because everybody voted for the same donut, and so the field's not even clearing. Just that one donut that everybody wanted is now gone.
Right, and nobody gets it.
And nobody gets it. No donuts for you.
Yeah, you're the donut Nazi now.
Apparently.
So that's it. So 9 games.
5. Top 5. Just 2 top 5s, which, yes,
is nine
made
games.
9 games. But I'm still going to call it top 5.
That's fine.
We limited ourselves. Yay!
But we hope that you really found something in this list that is of interest to you. If you have been listening to us for a long time, I don't imagine there's any shocking surprises here. But yeah, we're going into this week. This is episode's coming out on Monday, and you have a chance, because Amazon will ship in 2 days, to get some of these to your table this Thanksgiving.
So if you're yelling at your audio device right now, how could you have missed my favorite game for 5 players? You should let us know.
You should. The easiest way to do that is on our social media. You can get to us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at FamilyGamersAA.
Or you could join up our Facebook community and make a post there saying, I can't believe Andrew and Anitra forgot this game. Easiest way to get there is thefamilygamers.com/community. You could, of course, email us.
Andrew@thefamilygamers.com.
Anitra@thefamilygamers.com.
Please don't forget to subscribe to the show. Tell your friends about the show. and leave us a review at Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also find us on TuneIn.com, which means that we can be on your smart device.
In case you didn't know already, you can say, Alexa, play podcast The Family Gamers.
It's cool.
I like it.
Family Gamers podcast is sponsored by Wild East Games. You can find Wild East Games online at WildEastGames.com or at Wild East Games on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
Well, that's it for our show this week. We have lots of five-player games to pull out at Thanksgiving, and I hope you do too.
We're looking forward to it.
Until next week,
play games with your kids.